in here.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Pod Podcast. Now let's begin.
That's why, darling, it's incredible that someone so unforgettable thinks that I am unforgettable too.
Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me is my ever faithful and reliable co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Deason. How's it going, Kevin?
Aw, that was sweet. I feel like the blue-eyed thing.
Well, and the reason why I throw that out there is for our listeners is we had to reschedule this podcasting recording. A few times in the last few weeks, or in the last few months, I should say, and Kev's always, available for reschedule. This time, you know, where I live, it's extremely cold right now. Like, I live in, if you look at a map of Canada and the province of Alberta, I live just below the direct center of Alberta, in a town called Barrhead. And the entire western provinces of Canada have been in what we call a deep freeze. Like, we're getting Arctic air coming down. And on Wednesday, the night we were going to record, it was minus 32 degrees. And that didn't include the wind
chill. Celsius.
Celsius, yes. I am from Canada, so it is Celsius. And so it's minus 32 degrees, but that doesn't include what we call the wind chill, because there's the wind chill factor. So it was minus 32 degrees, but with the wind chill, it feels like, I think it was around minus 41. And we had a power outage. So, like, we live in an older house. I own an older house, so it's not built for the cold. It's awesome in the summer. In the summer, my house is always cool. Like, I don't have to have air conditioning. I just have a couple window fans going, and it's nice and cool in my house in the summer. It's awesome. But wintertime, it doesn't like the cold. It sucks. So when we lose our power, of course, we lose our furnace, you know, any plug-in heaters we got going on. And, the temperature dropped real fast, but it was off for less than 2 hours, so we were able to get everything going again. And so anyway, we had to reschedule the recording, and Kevin was gracious enough to change his schedule to help out. So anyway, we're here. We're doing an episode called Picks and Pans. This is the second time doing it for the Pop Culture Pub podcast. This is one of our franchise topics, but I was surprised when I was actually going back and realizing we only had done this once before. I think Jason and I did this. It was, I think, one of our first episodes. But, so anyway, we're going to list off some stuff that we want, you know, as a pick or a pan. And then we're going to get into our Ender segment, where we are going to discuss more current stuff. So, Kevin, why don't you kick it off? What's on first on your list as a pick or pan?
Who? All right. I am going to go with... I'm deep diving on a newish comic character. I was actually talking to my friend and fellow blogger and podcaster, Will West, about it earlier this evening. Mm-hmm. I am falling in love with Gwenpool.
Hmm.
And I might start, for those who have followed my stuff for a while, Speedball is my favorite comic character in the world. Mm-hmm. Has been for like 30 years now.
Nice.
Give or take.
He's an awesome character.
But I never... Great character. New Warriors comic in April. I got to make sure to pre-order.
Nice.
But, I've never had a female character. that I really enjoyed and wanted to collect and all. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to do like Wonder Woman or Harley Quinn or someone that has thousands of things out there.
Yeah.
I want something feasible. So like Speedball, for example, he's got New Warriors, his own series, couple appearances, no toys. It's an easy collection. You know, Spider-Man would be absurd. So, I saw the Gwenpool figure. I'm like, there's just something about this figure that's so cool looking. The pink and white color scheme, the sort of goofiness for it. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know more about it. I thought it was just like girl Deadpool is honestly what I thought it was.
Yeah.
So for any listeners that don't know, the idea of Gwenpool is Gwendolyn Poole, P-O-O-L-E, lives in our reality, our Earth. And through some cosmic thing, she gets transported to the Marvel 616 universe. Now, the thing is, while she was in our universe, she read all the same comics we read. So when she got moved into the Marvel universe, she knows everything.
Ah.
So she'll go up to, you know, to Spider-Man and be like, hey, what's up, Miles? What? How do you know who I am? So she knows who people are, who their sidekicks are, what's going on, their secret identities, their histories, other stories. She'll be like, hey, why don't we just solve this problem by doing this thing that you did in this comic? And they're like, what do you mean comic? That is my life. My life's not a joke. It's not a comic book. Well, it is to me. So she also will take these ridiculous risks and just flat out say, well, I'm the star of this book, so I'm not going to die. So if I jump off this building, something will just happen to save me. And it does.
Hmm.
So the only thing I can't get a read on, because it kind of... Because she's such a new character, it doesn't seem like there's a set way to show her yet, because she is younger. She gets tied into that new West Coast Avengers book. She's tangentially affiliated with the Champions, which is all teen superheroes. So she should be around the same age as Miles Morales, give or take. But then there's other things which play her up as a more attractive character. You'd say, like, young 20s, you know. So I'm not quite sure where she's supposed to be. Is it supposed to be, like Marvel's Harley Quinn, which in a way she kind of is? Or is it supposed to be a goofy... learning how to be a superhero teenage one for a younger reader to see themselves in. And I don't know if they quite know which one she is yet. I think it depends on the writer and the book. But it is, like, it's fun. It's all I want in comics. I want to be entertained, enjoy it, and just have fun. So I was going to start Volume 3 today, but I got doing other things. Well worth it if you find, a Comixology or your local comic shop or whatever. Well worth it. And I might start building a little collection somewhere in my house now for Gwenpool stuff.
Nice. That was one character. I had no idea anything about her other than, like, because there was the Spider-Gwen character.
Which I thought, yeah, and I thought it was the same idea.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Yeah, but no. Very different.
No, that sounds very interesting. Just to piggyback on yours, I had kind of the same thoughts that you were having about, you know, a female character, you know, trying to get into something. Listening to the iFanboy podcast, they did an episode a few months back where they talked about Black Cat, because there's a Black Cat series currently out by Marvel, and there was this one episode where she goes on a date with Batroc, or is that how you say Batroc?
Batroc. Maybe throw a little flair on it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Captain America's nemesis, and they go out on a date, and it was actually a fun issue. And then Comixology had the first volume of that series, I don't know, for like $5 or something. So I was like, okay, well, I'll check it out. I bought a couple of the issues that I missed between that one issue I read, so that's on my to-do list. But yeah, I really enjoyed the Black Cat series, and the one issue I read anyway, so I'm looking forward to it.
That would be an easy character to get a full collection of.
Oh,
I mean, she's popular. She's been around, but not, you know, in any unreasonable amount.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, like, you know, she was one of my favorite, obviously, because she's very beautiful, and, you know, her costume is probably one of the best cosplays you'll ever see. Like, it's absolutely awesome.
Yeah, true.
And of course, every convention I go to, I always see a Black Cat or a Black Widow. But yeah, no, it's a good series. So yeah, I'll report back when I read a little bit more. The first pick on my list, and this is a pick, you know, on this show, I complain a lot about Star Trek Discovery, which I will be complaining about in a little bit. but one show that is a very, I honestly think it's the best space science fiction show currently on TV. And I haven't seen Star Trek Picard yet, so... but it's The Expanse. They just had season 4 come out on Amazon. It had been on the Sci-Fi channel in the States, but as always, Sci-Fi, you know, canceled it because that's what they do. And Amazon thankfully picked it up, and they did a 10-episode season 4. And I just literally, I finished it about a half an hour ago as we speak here. I finished the season finale, because I wanted to see it all before I talked about it. I was going to talk about it anyway, but with the extra couple days that we had in between, I was able to finish the season. So the power outage actually kind of worked to my advantage a little bit. It's a great show. I love the cast. The cast includes Stephen Strait as James Holden. He's, you know, the protagonist of the show. Dominique Tipper plays Naomi Nagata. She's what they call a belter. She grew up on the asteroid belt in our solar system. Cass Anvar plays Alex Kamel. Wes Chatman plays Amos. Easily probably my favorite character. I love that guy. And I'm going to butcher her name, but Shohreh Aghdash. She plays the Secretary General. It's honestly, it's in my mind the best current space science fiction series. I'll just read a little bit from Wikipedia. It takes place hundreds of years in the future. Things are different than what we are used to after humans have colonized the solar system and Mars has become an independent military power. Rising tensions between Earth and Mars have put them on the brink of war. Against this backdrop, a hardened detective... this is basically talking about the first season. A hardened detective and a rogue ship's captain, that's Holden, come together to investigate the case of a missing young woman. The investigation leads them on a race across the solar system that could expose the greatest conspiracy in human history. Basically, that's... that little synopsis is explaining season one. And of course they expand on that. There's currently 46 episodes out there. As I said, this is on Amazon Prime now. They picked it up, so they have the entire series on Amazon Prime. And this is one series I actually have to go back and rewatch, because it did start in 2015, and there was a long break, I want to say, between season 3 and this season. Like, it was like at least a year and a half after Sci-Fi dumped it, and then Amazon picked it up. And I think the first few seasons were a little bit longer, like when they were on the Sci-Fi channel, like they were probably running like 13 episodes ish. But like this season was only 10 episodes, but it was worth it. It was a great show. I love, you know, like it's realistic. It's a realistic science fiction. Like these ships, you know, when they travel through space, the science is very real. And I know one of the fans of the show is none other than Rick Sternbach, who was the technical guy behind Star Trek Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager. He's the guy that designed the USS Voyager. So he's like, I kind of follow him because he talks on Facebook and stuff a lot. Like when he watches a movie, like he'll go see, the movie Gravity. He, you know, would talk about like the technical inaccuracies of that film or Interstellar and so on. And he, you know, praises The Expanse a lot. He's a big fan of The Expanse. So being a technical guy and, you know, and a guy that knows a lot about, you know, science, and he's worked in the field of science fiction, it says a lot. And it's definitely worth it. It's, like I said, on Amazon Prime. It's not perfect. I mean, I do have a few nitpicks. Like in this season, like the one planet that they're on, I don't want to give too much away, but they go to a planet, in another solar system that has oceans, but the rest of the planet is apparently dead. Like it's, you know, a barren world except for the oceans. And the whole time I'm wondering, like, what's in those oceans? Like, is there ocean life? You know, there has to be something, right? Because, you know, the planet, when you look at it from space, looks a lot like Earth, like where the oceans are blue and stuff. So that means there has to be, you know, algae and shit, right? Like there's gotta be something, right? So that was my only nitpick. I just wanted to know what was in those oceans. But other than that, it's a great show. And like I said, it's the best space science fiction show currently on TV, in my opinion. And now I'll throw it back to you, Kevin. What's your next pick or pan?
I'm going to do a pan. Not sure how many we'll get through tonight, but I want to at least sandwich, you know, the pan in between two good things. My pan is the quality level of modern day action figure toys. It's horrible. I did not realize how much Gorilla Glue I was going to have to go through in life with having a child. There's like one or two lines that can take a beating and stand up. And everything else is just garbage plastic that snaps right away. I mean, when I was a kid, the He-Man figures were huge. The Thundercat figures were huge.
Yep.
If you broke your G.I. Joe, it was because you spun it around too much and the rubber band snapped. And then you get out a Phillips screwdriver and you can replace that rubber band. The giant rubber WWF figures. Like, our toys, you could smack around and actually play with them. And they still work. You might lose, you know, a sword or a gun or something off of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the figure itself, like, most of my toys from the 80s still look good.
Mm-hmm.
I might be missing an accessory, but they still look good. The amount of stuff that we have had to glue or put aside or whatever, he got this really cool Pokemon toy. And it has a base on it in the package. I was like, oh, that's cool. No, it has to stay on the base because the legs are actually too weak and fragile. And if you try to do something foolish, like, I don't know, stand up your action figure, the legs snap right off of it. And so many of the toys, you know, look at the McFarlane toys just are showing up on the shelves right now. The McFarlane DC toys.
Yep.
It's 20 bucks for a Batman toy.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able, a kid should be able to just go in with, you know, their allowance, their tooth fairy money, their, you know, like not a whole lot of money, and be able to get a Batman toy. And that Batman toy should be able to fly and jump off of, you know, like a table onto the ground, onto a bad guy, and have an adventure and not get beat up. It's not a chance.
Not
a chance with those toys. But the only two, coincidentally, I think, that really stand up and take a beating are the Playmates brand ones. So Ninja Turtles is still done by Playmates, and those are good, solid figures. And the Ben 10 ones are actually, like, I'm beyond impressed with them. I know Ben 10's not, you know, it's popular, but it's not huge. It's not like, you know, the number one toy line or TV show or whatever for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But that is maybe some of the best-made, well-constructed, hard plastic, you know, looks great even though it's been in the bath and it's, you know, they've had giant battles and it's been all over the house, and the toys still look great and are all in one piece. But, like, I don't know if it's, you know, cost of plastic, cost of oil, import, export. Toy companies just trying to make more profits for less investment. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is for now compared to when we were growing up, but such a diminishing level of quality.
Oh, yeah, it totally is. Like, and I think you pointed it out exactly. Like, I really think it's like with anything, you know, they're going cheap, but yet they're charging more, you know, and
yeah,
and a quick tangent. It's like chocolate bars. Like, it's crazy. Like, when people show even from like 10, 15 years ago, how they've shrunk them, but yet they charge more.
The Toblerone pictures are the best example of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not even like, I don't even know the last time I had one. That's not like a go-to, but it's the most obvious change for it.
Yep. And then also on another quick tangent, I saw a news article recently, or a news segment on the news, about this guy that was saving a McDonald's hamburger for 20 years.
Was it Dinosaur Dracula?
That
sounds like something that you would do on that blog.
No, this guy's actually a teacher. And I'm not sure exactly if he's a science teacher or whatever. So he had this hamburger in like this little case or whatever, and he takes it out, and it looks exactly the same. Like, it looks like a McDonald's cheeseburger. The only thing is, when he took the top bun off, the pickle, like, I don't know, like, caught fire or something, because all that's left of the pickle is like a black stain on the bun. It burnt the bun, but everything else looks exactly the same. But anyway, we'll go back to the action figure thing. It's sad. It's especially when they charge so much. This was a couple of years ago now. I was in Walmart and they had a Grand Admiral Thrawn Star Wars figure, and I thought, I'm gonna buy that, and then I looked at the price and it was $30, and I was like,
yeah, not a chance.
Yeah, I'm like, I love Grand Admiral Thrawn, but $30 for, you know, just to have him sit on my, like, I'm kind of kicking myself in the ass because I don't see this figure around anymore. I kind of wish I had paid for it, but $30, how can a little, you know, like you said, like a kid with their allowance, you know, be able to afford these action figures now? Like, it's crazy.
Well, you could go and buy, like, multiple figures for whatever your favorite cartoon was when we were younger.
Mm-hmm.
For equivalent, you know, like $3, $5, $8 at most. Under 10, we'll say. I'll guarantee it was under 10. $3, $5, whatever. So, I mean, like, my brother and I had probably 100 G.I. Joes over the, you know, that we collected over the years. There's not, you can't do that with any toy line right now. And the fact that there's not, like, Marvel or DC being the biggest ones, I think the last great run of a comic line was the Justice League Unlimited animated-style figures.
Yep.
They were, you know, under $10 each, and they released so many obscure characters, plus there was always like a Superman or Batman in a different costume, and they looked great. I got a ton of them because they were affordable and they're class, you know, great characters you would never see otherwise.
Yep.
To have an animated demon figure, I was like, oh, this is mine. I can't wait for it. There's nothing like that now. I'm going through the superhero aisle. I'm like, all right, there's 100 Spider-Man, which there should be, fine. One Venom and no one else. So who are my 100 Spider-Men supposed to fight?
Yep.
When he's got one of the biggest rogues gallery in all of comics. You know, and I don't understand why. I mean, honestly, it's because they just don't care. You know, the major toy companies are like, no, give the kids some Spider-Man figures and some Batman figures, and that's enough.
Yep. Yeah, it's sad. It really is. And like you said, the quality, like it's just not there anymore.
No, they're either junk or they're these $30 ones, which are statues, really. They're not toys, they're statues.
Yeah. Well, and I did put this on social media. I forget, this was like about a year ago, maybe. They were, you know, they're re-releasing like the classic Transformers. And there was an Optimus Prime there at Walmart, and I think it was like $65, and it wasn't even like a big one. It was just like a normal sized one. Like, it wasn't like the extra big one that you may have gotten when you were a kid, but it was like, I don't know, like maybe 10 inches across by, like the box I'm talking about, 10 inches length, yeah. And maybe, you know, 10, you know, well, no, say about 6 inches tall. Like, it wasn't that big of a thing, but yet it's $65. Who can afford that?
No, you should see the Devastator re-release.
Oh, I can only imagine.
I mean, it's pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not feasible.
Yes. Yeah, I can afford to take a picture of the Optimus Prime, but I can't afford it. And it's funny. I went to a comic book store last fall, and I saw the Golden Girls in action figure form. So my wife asked me if I bought them. I was like, no, not at $40 a pop. No.
They were 40 each.
Yep. Well, they might have been 35, between 35 and 40. But yeah, I was like, I'll take a picture of them. I'm not buying them.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's crazy. All right. Well, so that was a pan. So I'll go with a pick on my list here, because I got a few here. And I'll switch it up, and I'll go comic books this time. And my pick, probably one of my favorite comic books of 2019, was Superman's Pal Jimmy Olsen by Matt Fraction and Steve Lieber. You know, it's I love what Matt Fraction is doing. It's, from what I understand, a 12-issue series that comes out monthly. And I think we're about 7 issues in at this point. And the way it's told is very reminiscent of, you know, comic books in the 60s and 70s, but with a modern take on it. Where each issue of Jimmy Olsen, there's about 4 or 5 different stories that are taking place. And they all tie in together. And as the series is progressing, you're seeing how they're tying in with one another. Like, one of the stories, they're talking about like Jimmy Olsen's, you know, ancestor that apparently was like a rich man, and he was one of the founding fathers of what is now Metropolis, and he was enemies with Lex Luthor's, you know, great 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 grandpa or whatever, and it's about them fighting with one another. And I think Jimmy Olsen's like great 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 whatever grandma might actually be like Lex Luthor's relative. So yeah, there's this whole dynamic of the Olsons versus the Luthers. Like, apparently this is a feud that's been going on since the 1700s, right? Which I find very very interesting. And then there's a story where someone's trying to kill Jimmy Olsen, and then Jimmy Olsen actually fakes his own death because somebody's trying to kill him, and he goes, basically he's living under an alias in Gotham, and then he has run-ins with Batman, like, and he's kind of pissing off Batman, because in Gotham he takes on a different, you know, moniker, like he's a different identity, and I want to say it's like Timmy Tolson or something. Like, it's it like he doesn't even try to make it, you know, like But I mean, this again, this is like, you know, 60s, 70s comic book goofiness, you know, like this is something that they would have done back then. And the, you know, and the, like I said, the style, but it's got that, that modern twist on it. Like it's such a good comic book. I love reading it. It's a lot of humor. You know, Superman does show up once in a while, but this is Jimmy's book, so it's mostly about Jimmy. And then a couple honorable mentions from 2019 as well. Conan the Barbarian. I love that comic book. It's so good. Who's writing it? Jason Aaron. Jason Aaron's writing Conan the Barbarian right now. And Red Sonja by Dynamite Entertainment. They just finished their first 12-issue arc, and it was fantastic. Mark Russell's the writer. Such a good writer. My pick for my, honestly, my favorite comic book of 2019, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen. So I'll toss the ball back over to you, Kevin. Do you have another pick or pan?
I do. I'm just going to go off of yours for a moment.
Sure.
I think, because I'm using all of my library access now to get caught up on as much stuff as I can and just deep dive. I got eight things sitting on my to read pile right now that I want to get through this weekend so then I can get to the rest of my queue.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to do a Conan and Red Sonja run at some point. I was looking through for what's available. I might throw Vampirella in there because I'm really curious about that Red Sonja Vampirella crossover comic. You know, two characters that there's no good reason for them to get together, and yet it makes sense too, though.
Yeah.
So I think I might deep dive on that. But the Jimmy Olsen one, I am loving just, it's a fun comic.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you know, go back, like Gwenpool feels that way a lot for me. Batroc's in it. Black Cat is in it, to really go back.
Yep.
MODOK's in it. I don't need a tight continuity for that. The characters show up. They're who they're supposed to be. They interact. They do what they're supposed to do in the story and move on. I don't care if Batroc, you know, was in jail in his last appearance and we need to explain that, or died at some point, or had a costume change at some point, or does it mention, you know, a girlfriend that was in some appearance in Captain America? Like, whatever it is. I don't care. He comes in, he's Batroc, that's who he's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
He does his piece, and then he's out. That's all I need. Jimmy Olsen is Superman's best friend, and because of that, weird stuff happens to him.
Yep.
Let's go. Let's tell the story. Like, that's all you need. So all this goofy stuff that people don't, you know, want to pretend doesn't play in 2019, 2020, that book sounds fantastic. Like, I can't wait for that. And, you know, I don't need to know how Jimmy Olsen ties into, you know, Dark Knight's Metal or Doomsday Clock or anything else. Just tell me the story. That's all I want.
Exactly.
Now, sorry, go ahead, and then I'll go to a pick.
I was gonna say one thing I wanted to mention about Jimmy Olsen. Like, one of the reasons why he's willing to do all those crazy things is because he has that watch, right, that Superman gave him, and all he has to do is hit a button on this watch and Superman will come, right? So, and I mean, they do that right away. Like, in, I think it's the first issue, like, he has to call in Superman to help him, right? But then going forward, he's making a point of not doing that. He's trying to solve, you know, all these mysteries of who's trying to kill him and so on. And he thinks Lex Luthor's involved because of their family history without getting Superman involved, which adds to the fun and to the zaniness. Because, I mean, it would be, you know, if all you did push a button, you get Superman to do anything. He can literally do anything. But he doesn't. And Matt Fraction plays with that in such an interesting and fun way.
I like the idea of the Olsons and Luthers possibly having a long family history, because that's something that you could say, all right, this was never in the comics before, but could have always been there.
Yep.
If you don't want to use this again for future writers, you don't have to.
Yep.
It doesn't ruin anything before. It doesn't change anything in the future. Yep. But it's a nice extra bit if you want to use it. Like, that's a nice extra piece to throw in there.
Yep.
I'm going to have to look to see any of it. You know, maybe the first six issues are already bundled and available.
Oh, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are.
Now, to go with, sometimes you just want to have fun with the classic character. I really liked the preview that is up on the Cartoon Network app of the new Thundercats Roar cartoon. And I wrote a little review for another site. But it is, yes, it's Thundercats done in the Teen Titans Go, Steven Universe, you know, regular show Adventure Time, that current
yep.
Cartoon Network
yep.
house style. It's Thundercats, it's goofy, it's over the top, it's, you know, super deformed animated. But it was fun. Because one's just goofy, you know, a sugar rush of a show. But they use it, it's shockingly close to the first couple episodes of the classic 80s cartoon, but with someone realizing how ridiculous a lot of that is and just turning it up, because it is. Hey guys, we're on this new planet. You all go make our new fort somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna go wander in the woods and have fun. Because that's exactly what happened in the 80s cartoon. Lino goes to screw off. Everyone else has to work, and he comes back, and somehow they have this giant cat's lair home built. So it's just taking that to a goofy point. And there's some stuff where I'm like, all right, this might be a little too far, this is a little too silly, or this, look, you know, it's Panthro doing it, but if you wanted to make this cyborg doing this exact same thing in Teen Titans Go, you wouldn't have to change anything else here. Yes, there's a lot of stuff like that. But, man, when they play the Thundercats music in the background, I'm there. I'm sold. It's enough of a callback to my childhood that I was all set for. And, you know, like, Thundercats had the 80s one. They've had numerous comic attempts. There was a reboot about 10 years ago, which was actually not bad, but mm-hmm. just never found its audience, really.
Yeah.
And this, it's all still fun, it's all good, and everything still exists that existed beforehand. Like, I got my Thundercats DVD sets, I can enjoy them anytime. I got some comics floating around here or there. Like, it's a goofy premise that was designed to sell toys to 8-year-olds 30 years ago. So, for anyone that hates what it is now, maybe it's just not for you.
Yep.
And if you're willing to do it with an open mind, it was funny, it was goofy, silly. If it comes on, I'm going to watch it. It was fun. I would love to see other characters brought in. I think that one of the big callbacks I can give someone is Groon, who was the Thundercat who went bad and has one giant, like, snaggle tooth coming out. It was used much better in the early 2000s reboot. If they do the super deformed cartoony style version of him on this cartoon, I'm going to lose it.
Yeah.
There's so much that can be done. I doubt they're going to try to tie in like Silverhawks or any of the brands that are owned by the same company, but that'd be entertaining as hell too.
Yeah. So it's called Thundercats Roar?
It's called Thundercats Roar, and it's okay. Sort of like a Gumball and Adventure Time arts, like 15-minute yep. episodes. So the first half hour is technically two episodes, but it's kind of one episode two because it was part one and part two.
Okay.
And I'm sure they're going to air them two episodes at a time, you know. But yeah, it was out. I know our apps are different in U.S. and Canada,
mm-hmm.
but the first two episodes were free on the Cartoon Network app.
Hmm. Which means it's not available in Canada.
No.
Like, we do get Cartoon Network, but, yeah, for some reason, like, the apps don't work up here. But I'll look it up. Like, I know, I'm sure you could buy it off Apple. Like, I've seen the pictures, but I've never seen it.
No, this was just within like the last couple, like the last week or two that they threw it up there, and I'm not sure if there's been an official like world premiere of it yet. But just that preview, I'm like, this was fun. It was fun. If my kid gets into the toys, I'll enjoy it. If not, cool.
Well, maybe.
And you know, maybe the toys will be well made.
Yeah, maybe a guy can watch it on YouTube or Facebook. Like, I know, like, the last three episodes of Rick and Morty of this new season that came out, I had to watch on Facebook because I don't subscribe to Cartoon Network Canada because it's, I don't know. It costs too much, and I didn't get it, and I kind of forgot about it. And but thankfully, someone posted the last three episodes on Facebook, so I was able to watch it on Facebook.
You know, Cartoon Network has, like, a YouTube channel, too, so maybe if you're throwing it up there for free, why not throw it across all your platforms?
Yeah. Excellent. I'll definitely check that out. All right, so we had a pick with yours, so I'm going to throw a pan out there. And now this is where the Star Trek Discovery conversation comes into play. So, I saw this comment on Facebook. The pan is for Short Treks. So I'll get into Short Treks, which is tied into Star Trek Discovery. This person made a great comment that I wanted to share about Discovery. This is exactly how I feel about it. So his comment was, I suppose my biggest problem with the show is that it just radically departs from all other Star Trek shows too much in tone, themes, aesthetics, and overall philosophy. And I totally agree. It you know, for a show that's supposed to be a prequel to the original Star Trek, it really doesn't feel like it. It needs to be a reboot, not a continuation of what preceded it. That's what I've been saying since day one. But then there's Short Treks. And for people that don't know, these are like little vignettes that they do. I think the first Short Treks took place between season one and two. And now these ones have taken place after, obviously, season two going into season three. And for this one, there's one, two, three, there's six of them that were... The first one was released October 5th, and the last one will have been released January 9th. And some of them are live action. They actually have, you know, actors in that, you know, using the sets and using, you know, the uniforms and all that. But then some of them are animated as well. So for this... I'm not going to talk about the, you know, using, you know, air quotes, season one of Short Treks. I'm going to talk about this new season, season two. So the first one that came out was called Q&A. So the synopsis for it is, on his first day aboard the USS Enterprise, Ensign Spock and his new superior officer, Number One, get trapped in a turbo lift. While waiting for the turbo lift to be repaired, Spock asks Number One numerous questions, and the pair bond over their similarities. And this, of course, starred Rebecca Romijn as Number One and Ethan Peck as Spock, and you did get a cameo of Anson Mount as Captain Pike. My issue with this one, this is an issue with Star Trek Discovery, with the writers and with the producers, and it's not getting their research right. I was listening to another podcast that called Word Balloon. It's a comic book conversation podcast with John Sutris. And he had Robert Burnett on, who was the director of Free Enterprise. And he has a YouTube channel and he does podcasts. He actually used to come on my Trek 1701 podcast when I used to do a Star Trek podcast. He came on a few times. Great guy. You know, the guy does his research. He's, he's a good speaker. And one of the things he pointed out on that episode of Word Balloon about in regards to Star Trek Discovery and Short Treks is these writers and stuff on the show aren't doing their research. You know, and he compared it to, like, if you're in high school, and okay, and you do a paper on history, and you don't get your facts right, you fail. Like, you get an F on your paper, right? And that's essentially what these writers and producers of Star Trek Discovery are doing, because they're not doing the research and they're failing. Because they keep insisting that this is not a reboot, that this is, you know, continuity, and it simply is not. And in this Q&A short trek, apparently the Enterprise turbolift system is like a gondola. Like, these turbolifts are connected to the wires, and it's like a gondola inside the Enterprise. Well, back in the 90s and 80s, there was a book called Mr. Scott's Guide to the Enterprise. And I have that book. And it clearly shows the turbolifts are not a gondola. It's not a gondola system. Like, they're in tubes, you know, that go, you know, vertical and horizontal throughout the ship. It's not a gondola. And this book was released almost was released almost 40 years ago. You know, like, I'm sorry, but do your research. The next episode was called The Trouble with Edward. On the USS Cabot, science officer Edward Larkin tries to solve the planet's food shortage by genetically modifying tribbles against his captain's orders, creating a species that is born pregnant and reproduces at a dangerous rate. The Cabot is overrun, and Larkin dies when he chooses to remain behind while the rest of the crew escapes. So, in this episode, there's this guy that did this YouTube video comparing this episode to the Lieutenant Barclay episode from season 3 of The Next Generation. Similar type of character, you know, socially awkward, you know, he's, you know, smart but can't express himself. And they totally, like, in this short trek, kind of shit on this guy. Like, it's very un-Trek-like for the captain and his crewmates to treat him the way they treat him. Even though he is eccentric and he is different, they really treat him like a piece of crap. He ends up dying at the end of this episode of Short Treks, and he literally gets eaten by tribbles, or overrun, or drowned in tribbles, I'm not exactly sure. And they literally turn his life into a joke. You know, like, the captain, she's giving this interview, as you know, I'm assuming with Starfleet Command, and she basically calls him an idiot. And then it's supposed to be a joke. Like, I'm sorry, this is Star Trek. Human life is not a joke. You don't just casually laugh when someone dies. Like, very un-Trek-like. Okay. Then there's another episode called, the third episode, called Ask Not. When Starbase 26 is attacked, Cadet Thera Sidhu is given care of a mutinous prisoner, Captain Christopher Pike of the Enterprise. Pike attempts to pressure Sidhu into releasing him, but she refuses. Pike reveals that this is all a simulated test, and by passing it, Sidhu is accepted as part of the Enterprise crew. All right. Another thing. Mutiny, I guess, is a commonplace thing in this universe. You know, like, I remember Next Generation, you know, when they did the Pegasus episode, I remember Picard saying that mutiny on a starship was unheard of, but in Star Trek Discovery, you know, our hero, Michael Burnham, is, you know, kind of applauded for being a mutineer. And then, yeah, this vignette was such a stupid premise to have Pike, first of all, apparently mutiny, and then it turns out this is all a Kobayashi Maru type of simulation, and this is just a test to see if this cadet, you know, can cut it on board the Enterprise by not giving in to the mutinous, you know, using air quotes, mutinous Captain Pike. Like, it's dumb. It was such a dumb episode. Okay. So the last one I'm going to talk about is the fourth one that they did. Because the last two I didn't watch, so I can't really talk to them. I think they're animated. But this one was animated as well. It's called Ephraim and Dot. So again, we're getting into the tardigrades. A tardigrade looking for a place to lay her eggs crosses paths with the USS Enterprise and is attacked by a repair drone named Dot. When the Enterprise self-destructs, Dot helps save Ephraim's eggs. When the eggs hatch, the pair travel with the baby tardigrades together. Okay, first of all, I thought Star Trek was being sued by the guy that came up with that game called Tardigrades, because they basically stole this guy's idea.
Yeah, even I've heard that story.
Yeah, so why they're doing a Short Trek about tardigrades, maybe they settled out of court. I'm not sure what's going on. So anyway, as you're watching this, well, first of all, Dot, I'm going to comment on this repair drone Dot. Apparently in Star Trek, they've had astromech droids the whole time, like R2-D2s essentially, only this one hovers. Dot hovers, but apparently it serves the same function as R2-D2 did on Queen Amidala's ship. You know, it's an astromech. It goes around and repairs things behind the scenes. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I've been watching Star Trek for almost my whole life. You know, pretty much since I was a toddler. I don't remember there ever being a droid on the Enterprise that floats around repairing things. That never happened. And in this one, because it's animated, they show different scenes throughout the history of Star Trek. So they actually show, like, Khan when he was first on the Enterprise. And they actually, you know, use Ricardo Montalban's voice and William Shatner's voice from that episode to recreate that scene. But you're seeing it from the tardigrade's perspective. Okay. Then, they, you know, fast forward to the events of Star Trek III. Where, you know, the Enterprise is in orbit above the Genesis planet. You see the Bird of Prey decloak, right? But in this animated version, the Bird of Prey fires and hits the Enterprise's saucer section and does damage. So right there, I'm thinking to myself, no, that's not what happened. I've watched Star Trek III probably at least 100 times in my life. You know, it's one of my favorite movies. I know for a fact that the Enterprise shoots first because they see the Bird of Prey coming in under cloak because they could see the distortion. So Scotty fires the torpedo as soon as they drop their cloak, and the Bird of Prey gets hit first. And then the Bird of Prey swings around and fires at the Enterprise's engines, disabling the Enterprise's automated system that Scotty had set up for the film. Because the last guy that shot a torpedo at a starship destroyed it on Captain Krug's ship, and he got executed for it. So the next guy coming up, the gunner, he was instructed to fire only at the engines, and that's exactly what he did. But in this animated version, you see it, the Enterprise not only not firing first, but that it's getting hit on its saucer section. Okay. You know, so right there I knew, okay, that's wrong. Then, because the Dot and the tardigrade have to save the eggs, the tardigrade eggs that have hatched. So they got to save all these tardigrade babies and get out of the Enterprise because they know it's self-destructing, or Dot realizes it's self-destructing, right? Because in that movie, you know, Captain Kirk sets the self-destruct, the Klingons beam over, and they get blown up, right? So when you see the Enterprise blow up on Short Treks, you know, they do a pan away from the Enterprise, you see it blowing up. And immediately, I look at the number of the Enterprise. Now, in Star Trek III, you know, for the movies they refitted the Enterprise, but it was still the original Enterprise that was in the TV show. It just looked different because it went through a refit, right? So that was the original Enterprise that was destroyed in Star Trek III, 1701. And to quote Captain Scott from Next Generation, there was no bloody A, B, C, or D, okay? It was just 1701. So when they pan up as the Enterprise is blowing up from being self-destructed, I see 1701-A. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Pardon my French.
So they get A and 4?
Yes, at the end of 4, they get the Enterprise A. So I'm like, guys, like, again, do your goddamn research. Like, they have people, like, this is animated. Like, they, like, someone put that in. So that means, like, the animators, the writers, everyone fucked up. Everyone fucked up on every level. Do your research. Yeah. So, unfortunately, again, this is the problem with Star Trek Discovery. Short Treks, it just sucks to see Star Trek be mediocre. And it shouldn't be mediocre. You know, I shouldn't be singing the praises of The Expanse, saying it's the best space science fiction show currently on TV. I should be saying it's Star Trek. Because 20 years ago, I would have said that. Big Pan, Short Treks, Star Trek Discovery. Sorry, it sucks. I'll throw the ball back to you, Kev. Do you have any more picks or pans?
Okay. Let me just quickly go for that.
Okay.
Off of what you're doing.
Okay.
It's... So, years ago, I did a podcast interview with a comic writer. And I was asking her all sorts of questions. Finally, she stopped me. She's like, you have done your research.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, yeah, why wouldn't I? She's like, no, you don't understand. She's like, I've done interviews with tons of comic magazines and, you know, podcasts and YouTube shows and all this stuff. She's like, you've done more research than them, than the, you know, quote, professionals.
Yeah.
You went into what I've done before, what I'm doing now, this, that, the other thing, you know, lines I said elsewhere and you're expanding on and all. She's like, no one does this. I said, well, why wouldn't you? And she's like, I know. That's what I thought too when I first got in the business and now I got used to it. So my attitude, you know, hearing you talk about Star Trek, I'm like, why wouldn't you do the research writing team or whatever? And this is a wrestling joke and I'll explain. There's a wrestling joke for a type of storyline and it's called lesbian pollen. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, hey, weird. There must be something in the air, some little pollen that is causing a reaction for us to be sneezing. In the story, it's lesbianism that appeared out of nowhere, has never been referenced before, will never be referenced again. But we magically are going to have it happen right now as if, you know, we have something in the air,
mm-hmm.
just to get out of our system, and then we'll all move on. So some of the stuff you're telling, you know, you're going off of for the Star Trek there, it seems like you had writers in the room there like, well, I want to tell the story. Yeah, but does it fit with our overall Star Trek mythos? I don't care. I want to tell the story, get out of my system, screw you. I'm a writer on the show, you're not.
Yep.
Well, okay, it's not that's a bad story, but it doesn't fit here. You're trying to fit your square story in this round hole here. It doesn't fit.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing...
There's an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond that, I mean, how long did that show go off the air and how long was it on? But it was... his brother, Robert, needs to borrow money. And every single thing in the show is so against what that character is previously, I went on IMDb to look up who the credited writer of that episode was, what he had done before, if he'd ever written for the show before. I'm like, this is just so out of character. It sticks out as an awful episode. And while that's, you know, I mean, it's a show ahead of its time. It's not a show I own. It's not a show I, you know, have watched millions of times. But man, the episode bothered me so much. Because as someone that's, tries to be a writer and has researched stuff and done all my own work, I believe in a character has to stay true to a character. And to have one thing that sticks out, a complete 180, hurts. It hurts the show, hurts the character, hurts all of it.
Yep.
And it looks terrible. And it seems like sometimes it's, oh, well, I have this idea. All right, good. Take your idea somewhere else. Sometimes the idea doesn't work where you're here.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It just doesn't work here.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, do your research. Like, there's no other franchise on the face of this planet that has more written about it than Star Trek. You know, there's so many there's so many things you can reference to find out if it's been done or what needs to be done, you know, especially if you're wanting to stay in continuity. You know, at this point, I just wish they would just say, hey, guys, this is a reboot. And then that would settle a lot of this. Then I would be actually kind of interested in the short track. Like, okay, obviously they got the Enterprise A sooner than they did in Star Trek history. So what's the story there? You know, like they could work it to their advantage. But they're just not, because they're just stupid.
I'll bet now they retcon it as a reboot.
I hope so. And yeah, I really do. But sorry, Kev, continue.
No, that's all right. So I'm gonna do another pick here. It's kind of a future pick, but stuff got announced, and I kind of hope it sets a trend. And I would like to do a pick for free streaming. Because NBC, and again, apologies for Canada versus the States. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what or at all this might be in Canada. But NBC is going to start their own streaming service called Peacock in July. Because everyone has to have their own streaming service now.
Yeah.
And the whole point, the whole appeal of Netflix when it was a monster, and then Hulu and other ones, is, hey, this is cheaper than cable. And having thousands of channels and only watching like 20.
Yeah.
But you can't pay for only the 20 you want. You have to pay for all of it.
Yep.
The whole point of enjoying streaming was, this is so much cheaper. Let me cut the cord. But now everyone has to have their own service. So if you subscribe to all the services, you're no better than you were with cable.
Yep.
NBC's Peacock, though, announced three tiers. A $10 tier, a $5 tier, and a free tier.
Hmm.
Here's the difference. $10, live sports, no ads. $5, live sports, ads. Free, no live sports, and ads. I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a sports person. I don't need live sports. You want to throw some commercials on? That's fine. I'm all for streaming media working like the antennas used to do. Let me just go to my, you know, local CBS affiliate, NBC, you know, for Canada, your local CTV affiliate or whatever. Turn the dial, do the bunny ears. I get it for free. I got commercials. Big deal. That's what TV used to be. And then we all got cable and enjoyed it until we got price gouged out of it.
Yeah.
But if NBC wants to be like, hey, here's all the content we own. If you want to watch it for free, you got to sit through some ads. Okay. And if it's successful for them and their ad revenue is high and CBS or Fox or Hulu or anyone else wants to play that game too, more than good with it. But that's way, like apps, other apps we have, Tubi and Pluto and some other ones that stream hundreds, if not thousands, of options for content. Oh, well, we have commercials in it. I'm more than all right with that. for any streaming service you want to throw a bunch of commercials on to pay for what you're providing me, I'm good. I will say right now, if I'm, well, we don't have cable, so let's say I'm at someone else's house and they got cable going, and I DVR'd something, I'll fast forward through the ads.
Yep.
But I can't fast forward through, you know, Hulu or Pluto or Tubi or these upcoming apps. I can't. So you're telling me I can have the content for free, but I'm going to be forced to watch your advertising? Sold. Deal. Deal. Save me the money.
Yeah, I'm okay with
all
that.
For if people want to do old school antenna style with ads, if that's our new type of streaming, I'm all for it. And I will give my free support upon this NBC app when it launches in July. That's my pick right now. Looks like a lot of cool stuff they're adding to it, so I'm sure I'll have, you know, recommendations later in the year and everything for it. But I would love to save money this year with some of these apps going free with ads.
Excellent. Unfortunately, as you said, I live in Canada, which means we are forbidden from having nice things. We don't get to enjoy the same fruits that our American neighbors get to indulge in.
Especially when so many are filmed in Canada too.
Well, I know it's crazy. But we have this thing called CanCon up here, and what CanCon refers to, and you hear this if you listen to Canadian radio stations. It's called Canadian content. An NBC app is not allowed in Canada because it may not have, using air quotes, Canadian content. That's CanCon. So shows. You know, like a lot of NBC shows, like the primetime stuff, you can see on one of our networks. Like you see it either on Global, CTV, or CBC, or City. And so you have to watch on one of their channels. It's very similar to like the Super Bowl. Like in the States, you guys get to watch all them cool Super Bowl ads, right? Like a lot of people don't even watch the Super Bowl for the football anymore. They watch it for the ads. In Canada, unfortunately, because of CanCon, we don't get to see all the ads you guys get to see. We get to see Canadian ads for the Super Bowl, which generally suck compared to what you guys get to see. An NBC app I would love, because like I'm a big fan of Dateline. I love watching Dateline. They don't show Dateline on any other network in Canada. So when I watch it on NBC, like on my satellite, I actually get to watch it. Like it's with the American ads and everything with it. It's like 48 hours. 48 hours is a CBS show that's not on any Canadian network, right? So I get to watch it actually on the CBS channel. Like if you watch any like NBC, CBS, ABC in Canada, if that same like I'll just pick a show at random. Let's say Law and Order SVU. If I watch that, but it's also airing at the same time on CTV, they will cut the NBC. If I tune into the NBC channel, they'll superimpose the Canadian channel over the NBC channel. So I have to watch the Canadian version so I get the CanCon, right? And it sucks because like a lot of shows, when you watch it on a state's channel, again, using an example like Lost, for example, you know, they would have a preview of the next episode, you know, next week on Lost or whatever, right? But then CTV doesn't show that. So they superimpose the CTV channel over, I guess it was ABC that Lost was on. So I would never get to see the preview for next week's episode. And it always pissed me off. And there's nothing we can do because, you know, the Canadian Radio and Television Corporation, or whatever they're called, CRTC, rules over our lives as far as, you know, channels and stuff like that goes. And it really sucks, because I would love to get, like, the NBC app, like you said, like, even the free version, just, you know, whatever. But you can't.
See, and the weird thing for that is, sorry, when I was growing up, we had, because I was in New York, so close Canadian border, yep. We had multiple Canadian channels on our cable.
Yep.
And there were some, you know, so I mean, I'm aware of Canadian shows that I really shouldn't be, mm-hmm. but I knew because when we have CKWS, CJOH, City came in later at mm-hmm. some point. When cable expanded, we got Much Music, which became Fuse when it moved to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
But all of them were great for, like, CKWS, CJOH would play Lost, for example. I can't remember if that was one, but just to use it for an example. It would be on at 9 in the U.S., but geez, there was something else I wanted to watch at 9. Oh, look, the Canadian channel's playing it at 8. I don't know why. I don't care. I'll watch yep. that from 8 to 9, then watch yep. the other thing from 9 to 10. There are multiple shows like that that were just on earlier or later for who knows why. But then they would also, like, Much Music had about a year, maybe 2 years, where they were a better music channel than MTV or VH1.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just kind of followed suit with them. But they had better guests, better shows, better VJs, more interesting stuff, interviews. Actually, I was in Toronto at one point and stopped by their studios. I just showed up. I was like, it's Much Music. They're Canadian. They're nice. Maybe they'll let me in. They yep. did not. I happened to be walking by studios. I'm like, maybe they're recording something today. They were not. They were like, why are you even here? I don't know. You're Canadian. Seem nice. I thought I could get in. but then, like, the, you know, stuff like the Raccoons, which we've talked about before.
Yep.
Owl TV was a children's educational show that was loads of fun.
Yep.
And other people in this, you know, that upper area know about it. Ed the Sock was wonderful. I love the Ed the Sock show, and there's no good reason I should know about it. Canadian late night infomercials were always more interesting. You guys get away with more than US did. I don't know how. But I'm getting, like, I don't understand how I'm getting all the good Canadian stuff, but you, I guess it's that can kind of role, you weren't getting all the good US stuff.
Yeah, and it seems like as...
Like, I'm getting the better end of this deal here by far.
Well, when I was younger, like, it's like as satellite technology has changed, things have only, like, it's like things have gotten worse. Like, when I was younger, like, our old satellite system was basically an American satellite system, which was awesome. And I used to get, like, the Sci-Fi Channel, USA, you know, those kind of channels. But then now the old satellite systems have been kind of outlawed in Canada, and you can't use them anymore. And when I'm talking satellite systems, I'm talking about those big 8 foot, 10 foot dishes, right? That actually used to move
yeah.
to catch certain satellites. Yeah, you can't get those in Canada anymore. Like, all you can get are like the big Canadian satellite companies, like Shaw Direct, Bell, that sort of thing, Rogers, but then they're in league with the TV. Well, because Shaw is owned by Shaw Media, which owns a number of television. Oh, who do they own? They own one of the networks, and then of course Bell is owned by Bell Media, which owns CTV, City, all this other stuff. So that's why they don't want Canadians watching the Sci-Fi Channel. They want Canadians watching CTV's Sci-Fi Channel. You know, not that, you know, the American Sci-Fi Channel is any better. Like, at this point, you know, it's really not that great from what I understand. But, I mean, back in the day, I loved the Sci-Fi Channel. I loved USA Network. And we can't get those up here. It sucks. As the technology has changed, it's easier for the Canadian broadcasters to basically, have us Canadians viewers by the balls, and they're like, yeah, you're not going anywhere. You're watching what we say you watch. And it's like that digitally, too. Like, you know, watching stuff on the internet. You know, like I tried so hard to get Hulu. My IP address, I can't. I mean, there's apps you can get where it can fool them, and, you know, like, I appear to be from Hawaii instead of from Canada, and it might work, but then you got to pay for all that shit, too, right? Like, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not as bad as it used to be. Like, for example, like, when the new Battlestar Galactica was coming out, we would get it, like, months after it actually aired in the States, which sucked because, you know, like, you'd pick up an issue of Entertainment Weekly and it would talk about an episode that, you know, I wouldn't get to see for like another month or two. You know, in that way, things have gotten better. Like, we are pretty on par with the States as far as airing. Like, you know, when Star Trek Picard comes out, it's the same time as it is in the States as it is in Canada. So in that way, things are better. But again, you know, like in other ways, they got us by the balls. And yeah, it's not a lot of fun. But all right.
Mean, that's any, sorry.
Go ahead.
Thing. Cause yep. I know we went off tangent there. That's any of it though, because like there should be an overall dedicated, hey, here's content from other countries. Which, because legal and rights and everyone wanting to make money, there isn't. But there's enough U.S. shows that you're not getting. There's there's probably some amazing Canadian show that I'm not getting, that I'm not even aware of. The last one I know of is was it Lost Girl, which was like this fantasy sci-fi show.
Yep.
No one knew about it in America. Sci-fi finally brought it over. My wife and I went nuts. We're like, this show is amazing. But it was just, like, buried in America. It was so good. Australia has this gory-as-hell zombie TV show that I only found out about because someone found a trailer randomly for it. Like, this is in Australia and no one has it over here. What's a fellow Canadian there... Kale talks about Fresh Eggs, which is New Zealand, I think, which no one in the States has ever heard of. Like, I'm trying to find... if I wanted to buy an all-region DVD player and import it from New Zealand, maybe I could get some of the stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm not paying that much for it. I'm willing to pay something, but not that much. So, and that's just a couple of... mostly, you know, of predominantly English-speaking countries that we know we're not seeing stuff for. You go for the rest of the world, you know there's some amazing show that we're not getting and we'll probably never see.
Yep. Yes, unfortunately. And it's weird, like, we live in a digital age, you'd think it would be easier, but they have these, like I said, like, digital... It's like there is a digital wall between... the United States and Canada that, you know, governs what we can see, you know, and I mean, that's worldwide too. Unless you're willing to pay for one of them apps, which I think my sister used to do that for Netflix. So she would actually watch like Netflix because her husband's from Sweden. And there's a different version of Netflix, of course, in Sweden that has more Swedish content. So they got this app so he could watch some of his shows from Sweden that he can't watch in Canada. But again, you got to pay for that shit, you know?
And again, I'm willing to pay something, but I'm not willing to go broke over.
Yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, I got one final quick pick. And it's a book, that I picked up, as a Christmas gift. My wife gave me an Amazon gift card. So I ordered this book that I knew I wanted to get it, but I just didn't have the time to read it. And rather than have it sitting on my shelf collecting dust, I was like, I'll order it another time. And when I got this gift card for Christmas, I was like, I'll do it. You know, I'll buy it, I'll order it. And Amazon got it here very quickly, and I've been reading it, and it's excellent. And it's called A Lit Fuse, The Provocative Life of Harlan Ellison.
Fuck you. What is this?
It's a biography of Harlan Ellison that was written
by who?
His name is Nat Sigaloff. It was originally published in 2017. It's been on my wish list on Amazon for a while now, but I mean, I've got so many books to read, and I don't know, the mood just struck me. I was like, I want to read a good biography, and I love Harlan Ellison. We've talked about him on the podcast before. Like, you know, he was a commentator. That's how I first was introduced to Harlan. Well, I was first introduced to Harlan Ellison unknowingly, as he was the writer of City on the Edge of Forever, my favorite Star Trek original series episode. Probably one of the best Star Trek episodes ever written, from the whole franchise. So that was my first introduction to Harlan Ellison. Then I got to see him on Sci-Fi Buzz when he used to be the commentator on Sci-Fi Buzz on the Sci-Fi channel. And I love his commentaries. I still watch him on YouTube. Unfortunately, Harlan Ellison passed away in 2018. He was in his 80s, and he had a stroke, I think, in 2014, and he wasn't doing very, you know, he was an older gentleman and having some health issues, and unfortunately he passed in 2018. So I went on this binge of watching his commentaries that people, you know, God bless them, put on YouTube from Sci-Fi Buzz. And I've since went out and bought a bunch of his books to read. And so this biography, I've seen it. I finally ordered it. So just reading the quick Wikipedia write-up, A Lit Fuse is an unguarded, uncensored, unquiet tour of the life of Harlan Ellison in late 2011. Harlan Ellison, the multi-award-winning writer of speculative fiction, this is his biography. And what an interesting life. I'm as far into the book as, I think, mid-60s. They haven't talked about Star Trek yet, so we haven't got there. But, I mean, he's been married twice at this point, I think, and divorced twice.
So he's already gotten beaten up by the gang.
Not yet. I don't think we've gotten to that part
yet.
He moved across the country to Hollywood, and it's a great book. It's really well written. What an interesting life this man led. And one of the things I admire about Harlan Ellison is he is outspoken. It's one of those things, like, I always wanted to meet Harlan Ellison, but part of me, maybe I shouldn't have met him, you know, maybe it was a good thing, because he's one of those guys that he'll tell you, like, exactly what he thinks at that moment, right? Good or bad. Maybe, you know, if I'd met him and he'd been having a bad day or something, it might not have ended well, you know? In a way, I wish I could have met him. I especially wanted to go to his house, because he has they call it Ellison Wonderland, because you go there and it's like a library. He has so many books. He has an amazing comic book collection. He's a huge comic book fan. He had won so many awards. Stephen King has been. I know there's a quote. I can't remember what book it was. It was a book I got from the library like 20 plus years ago, that of Ellison's that I read. And one of the quotes, I want to say it was on the back of the jacket, was a quote from Stephen King saying that Harlan Ellison is his favorite writer. And to me, that says a lot. If Stephen King is saying, hey, this guy is my favorite writer, that says a lot about Harlan Ellison right there. So yeah, that's my pick. The biography of Harlan Ellison, A Lit Fuse. Kevin, did you have anything to add?
You have no idea what, like, I have to get this now.
Well,
I'm going to be checking through my resources tomorrow.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Or tonight.
Yeah.
I might have access to it, not know.
And there's apparently they did a movie, like a documentary about Harlan Ellison in 2008.
Dreams with Sharp Teeth?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's good.
Is it? I haven't seen it. And unfortunately, I can't find it anywhere on DVD unless I'm willing to pay like $100 and some, which unfortunately I'm not.
Do you have a Roku or a Fire Stick or anything like that?
I do, yeah.
In the search option, just type it in, and it's one of those ones that will randomly show up on like some random Roku Fire Stick app that you don't have. Like last time I typed it in, it turned out there's some documentary app, like DocuSeries or whatever.
Oh, okay.
That I didn't have, and it was on there for free, so I watched it and then got rid of the app because there wasn't anything else I wanted. But it'll randomly show up in these things for like 90 days or 30 days or whatever. So that's how I finally caught it.
Okay. I'm writing this down. Look up Harlan.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just went into the search for Roku and I typed in Dreams with Sharp Teeth and it came up.
Perfect. But
if I typed in Harlan Ellison, it didn't, which is weird.
Dreams with Sharp Teeth. Yes. Okay. I'm going to do that because I did see it on Apple, which whatever, like I'm willing to pay for it because I love Harlan Ellison, but it's weird. You can't buy it. You can only rent it from Apple.
Well, would it shock you if he did that somehow, or, you know, if that was part of the contract?
Probably. Cause
the way he was with things.
Yeah. Like And it's funny because like, you know, people like in literary, because I know he did tour, you know, a lot of colleges and a lot of universities, and he did give a lot of speaking engagements. He was very big in the literary circle as well as, you know, the science fiction and fantasy community. But like my mom, for example, she has no idea who Harlan Ellison is.
No.
You know, when I say, well, Harlan Ellison's Stephen King's favorite writer, she's like, huh? Like, I don't, like she has no idea. And unfortunately, I think a lot of that had to do with the type of person Harlan is. Because I think Harlan, honestly, you know, when people ask me I think it was my brother-in-law when I was telling him about this book I ordered, and he's like, well, what's he best known for? And I'm like, honestly, his biggest contribution is probably the Terminator. Like what people,
yeah.
And well, he created the Terminator. I'm like, no. James Cameron took two different episodes. Yeah, basically stole two different concepts that Harlan did for episodes for The Outer Limits and basically made the Terminator out of it. And Harlan Ellison sued him and he got paid off and actually gets a credit during the credits of the Terminator. But that's probably what he's most famous for. But the thing is, I think he honestly would have been like a giant. And he is a giant. Don't get me wrong. Like he is in my view, he's up there with Bradbury. He's up there with Asimov. But you know, like my mom knows who Isaac Asimov is. My mom knows who Ray Bradbury is. My mom doesn't know who Harlan Ellison is because I think Harlan Ellison pissed so many people off because he burnt a lot of bridges and God bless him. Like, you know, there's very few people out there that are willing to basically sabotage their own career for their own ideals. You know, most people are willing to, okay, well, I'll give in, but Harlan never did. He lived life on his terms. And if you didn't accept those terms, then, you know, his attitude was, fuck you. I don't need you. Which unfortunately, like, you know, was a detriment to him within the general public. But I mean, for us science fiction fans and literary fans, you know, he was a giant and made him that much more impressive that he was willing to, you know, actually stand by his ideals and stand up for what he believes in. But anyway, yes, I highly recommend this book to anyone. And yeah, I know you'll love it, Kev, because it is well written, and it is very honest. So far that I've read, I'm very impressed.
Yeah, I'm looking for this like as soon as I can. This is whenever I get my hands on it. This is going next to read.
Excellent. And honestly, it's been a while since I've had a book that I don't like to put down. Like this one is a page turner. Like I've been enjoying it. All right. Well, do you have any other picks or pans you want to throw out there before we move on to our Ender segment?
No, we can go to Enders. That's cool.
All right. Well, let's move on to our Ender segment. So for Enders, there's a few things I want to talk about, and then of course, Kev, anything you want to talk about. But one of the first things I wanted to talk about, and I would say this is a pick and a pan, for if I was going to include this in the picks or pans segment, and that's Crisis on Infinite Earths, the CW, you know, crossover of the Arrowverse. I just watched the last two episodes, I think Tuesday night, I think. So it, like this crossover, this 5-part crossover really should have been a 12-part crossover because there was so much that they, that they should have done or could have done, but I understand they're on a television budget and they're, you know, there's constraints. But, you know, overall, I was okay with it. Honestly, I checked out of the Arrowverse about 3 years ago just because there's so much and I couldn't keep up with everything. You know, like Arrow does 22 episodes a season. Flash does 22 episodes a season. Supergirl does 22 episodes a season. And then Legends of Tomorrow usually does about 13 or so. So right there, that's almost 80 hours of content, and that's not even including, you know, now there's Batwoman, you know, there's Black Lightning, you know, there's so much that I just couldn't keep up. But, you know, when they do these crossovers, I tend to check it out, and Crisis on Infinite Earths, they've been, you know, plugging it a lot. And there were some great scenes and cameos, but overall I was left very underwhelmed. For example, like it was cool to see Tom Welling in this. It was cool to see Kevin Conroy playing Bruce Wayne. It was especially cool, seeing Burt Ward, you know, the Batman, you know, the original Robin from the original, you know, 60s Batman show. And then, yeah, seeing Ezra Miller as the Flash. I mean, that, you know, that was cool. But all these cameos and stuff, they didn't go anywhere. Like, the only one that kind of paid off a little bit was the Kevin Conroy one, but again, you know, like, that should have been a whole episode. You know, like, this should have been a bigger event than what it was. And there was a comment that someone made on Facebook that I thought was really, really good. So this guy, his last name's McLean. Guthrie McLean. I'll give credit where credit's due. I have this guy's name, Guthrie McLean. The last two episodes became very disorienting. Oliver died twice, but there's two episodes of Arrow left, isn't there? ? So he'll have to come back only to die for a third time. Okay, I like what they're all on the same Earth now, except there's others. But this is annoying. John Diggle has two children now. The daughter, which Barry Allen originally erased from the timeline. But does John remember? And Superman doesn't know he has a son? I don't like this. No, not about Superman not having a kid, but this new universe timeline gap. Only the Paragons remember that they won't know what's changed entirely. This is messed up. And I agree, because it's like, I thought the whole point of Crisis on Infinite Earths was you're going to bring everything onto one Earth, which they did with the Arrow character, like the Arrowverse characters, but now they're telling you, well, the Doom Patrol, because they show a, you know, snippets of all these other DC shows that they're doing. So you see the Doom Patrol, they're on a different Earth. You see Titans, they're on a different Earth. You see, you know, the Superman Returns Superman, he's doing his thing again. You know, Ezra Miller's out there, so that now they've tied in the DC movies into the Arrowverse, but they're on a different Earth, even though they don't tell you what Earth they're on. The new Stargirl series that's going to be coming out, apparently they're on a different Earth. Like, I don't know. Like, my biggest complaint was, yeah, like, they had all these scenes and cameos, but nothing really happened. Like, they didn't really add to anything. And yeah, it just seemed kind of corny at times, and a little cheesy. But Kev, did you watch any of these, or what's your thoughts?
It, because I understand what you're saying. Like, from a fan service perspective, loads of fun, tons of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there is a, all right, now what? And I'm all for the cameo, the wink, the nod, the passing yep. torch, the and one of the best ones I remember is The Rock's first starring movie, The Rundown, I yep. think it was called.
Yep.
There's a scene where, you know, he walks into a club to go after his, whoever he's hunting, whatever. And Arnold Schwarzenegger walks out at the same time.
Yep.
And says something like, good luck. And it was a cheesy cameo, a symbolic passing of the torch, but it was fun.
Yep.
It was nice. So there's a lot of stuff for the Crisis stuff that seemed like that. Hey, here's a little wink and nod, but you're right. It's like, okay, but if they're going to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And if we got like an endgame moment of here's everyone lined up, not just everyone that's in the Arrowverse that's assigned to a show and under a long-term contract, but if everyone else, well, I mean, grant some of them were killed off along the way, or, you know, their Earths were,
mm-hmm.
but if everyone else was lined up for the battle, how much cooler would that have been? Cause I mean, look at the Crisis on Infinite Earths series. Part of it is the scope, and yes, credit for Perez, but the unbelievable amount of heroes that you had all together in one battle. Not just, well, here's who we're going to be, you know, marketing and pushing for, and, you know, we have under deals here, so, mm-hmm. which is still a lot, because there's so many freaking CW shows. But, yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought of it, but it would have been nice if, like, instead of just having all these people showing up, you know, for little cameo appearances and all, if they were able to all team up and line up together and be in one big, you know, endgame level thing at the end.
Well,
but I think it's also as best as they can do. I like, here's the Hall of Justice, and here's,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot I like, but it does... I think what we're getting at is if it's going to be one big shared universe, then we need one big shared, or sorry, one. If everyone's together, everyone needs to be together. If everyone's apart, I deal with everyone being apart. I never thought Michael Keaton, Batman, Christopher Reeve, Superman would cross over for many reasons, mm-hmm. but I never thought that. But if you had, I don't know, Margot Kidder or Lois Lane show up to interview Bruce Wayne, played by Michael Keaton, then I'm going to say, okay, then from now on you need to explain why Superman isn't showing up in a Batman movie and why Batman isn't showing up in Superman. You've established they're in the same universe, so you need to always, either they need to always be together, or you need to explain why they're not. So now this new giant shared universe, you're going to have like, oh no, Team Flash, how are we going to defeat this one? We'll call Supergirl. call Superman. Well, we can't. Why? Well, because they're on another show. We know that's the reason why we can't.
Yeah.
But now we have to constantly explain why we can't just call up the other heroes every time there's a big villain. Whereas previously, well, why don't we call Supergirl? Well, because she's on another Earth.
Yeah.
That's why we can't. Now it's going to be like, well, oh no, because I don't want to, because, you know, her phone's off.
Unfortunately, like, I know they're on a TV budget, so they're very constrained. Unfortunately, I think there were so many missed opportunities. Like, Burt Ward, for example. I would have loved if they had done a whole episode, because they got this new Batwoman, right? Like, have her in that universe, having to work with Burt Ward as Robin, and using all these goofy, you know, 60s-era gadgets, but they work, right? Like, they do, you know, what they're supposed to do, and she's like, how does this work? But on that Earth, that's how it works.
Yvonne Craig's past, but even if he, you know, he sits and he sees Batwoman, and she, you know, swings across, and she beats someone up, and she does something awesome, well, and if he just stared at her, and he was like, wow, Barbara would have loved to have met you. Like, that alone would have meant so much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, like I said, I'm not saying that was, you know, this is terrible or anything. I mean, it's just...
No, not at all. It's just you were so close, and we could have gotten even more.
Yeah.
Like, one more episode worth, one more hour would have been like, yes, thank you.
Well, and I do love the risks they took, like having Brandon Routh, you know, he's literally in a scene as Ray Palmer and as Superman. Like and
pulls off both.
Yeah, and as Ray Palmer, he looks at Superman, and he's like, "Wait a minute, I'm Superman on your world?" And he's like, "No, I'm Clark Kent." And then, you know, and then what's his name? Lex Luthor has that line, like, oh, great, you know, looking like, you know, something to aspire to, looking like a Kryptonian. You know, like, I just loved those little tidbits. And having Marv Wolfman.
That was great.
Like, doing a Stan Lee-esque cameo. It was fantastic. You know, I'm not hating on this. I just wish, unfortunately, it could have been better. Like, you know, there's definitely more they could have done, you know, but, you know, like I said, unfortunately, unlike Avengers Endgame, where they had, like, you know, this crazy budget and time, I know, on, you know, TV moves faster, and I know, you know, budgets are a lot tighter, but, yeah.
You know, and that's a good point. I would say, given the constraints of TV, they exceeded what anyone would have thought possible.
Oh yeah. Like,
as it's kind of a movie compared to a movie, though, it fell short.
Yes. But I mean, again, like, I mean, you go back 10 years, if you had said 10 years ago, there's going to be a TV version of Crisis on Infinite Earths and it's pretty good, you'd say to yourself, that's impossible.
Not a chance.
Yeah,
that first episode of Flash where they tease it, I'm like, there's not a chance they get this far, not a chance they pull it off.
Yeah. Well, when I see that, I just...
That version of me that thought that was wrong.
Yeah. Well, for me, well, like, I remember that, and I remember thinking, oh, like, eventually the end game, you know, using air quotes, for this is they're going to transition this show into the movies, and we'll see this in a movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that they pulled off what they did is still very impressive. All right. So let's switch gears and let's talk about the Morbius trailer. So what's your take on Morbius? Like, for me, he's just one of those characters that's, you know, occasionally shows up in Spider-Man. Like, I don't really... Like, I never read any of the Morbius comics, you know, because I know he's had, like, a few limited series. You know, like, the, you know... Vampires don't really pique my interests, you know, typically. And going into this trailer, I had very little expectations, because honestly, I haven't even watched the Venom movie. And, you know, it's just one of those things. I'm like, you know. But with this Morbius trailer, I was actually kind of surprised that, you know, especially the star power that's behind this. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on Morbius as a character and going into the trailer?
I mean, for the character, it was, you know, when I saw him in the comics, it's 70s polyester suit vampire, really.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, tragic, overacted in the Spider-Man cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
They tied him in with Midnight Suns.
Yeah.
When Ghost Rider was huge in the 90s. But I just didn't care. I didn't get into those. I kind of, part of me wants to get that whole series in, you know, like some cheap back issue bins, but I haven't gone that far yet.
Yeah,
I actually just read.
I was just going to say, I was trying to think of the other character, because I knew there was Ghost Rider and Blade. And I was trying to think, there was another one that was tied into the Midnight Suns, and yeah, it was Morbius.
Well, the Morbius, they did both Ghost Riders at the time, Johnny Blaze's back and Danny Ketch.
Right.
Blade was, did he have a team, maybe? I don't know. There was the Darkhold as well, which was chasing after the Darkhold book.
Okay.
And I think for a little while they threw Doctor Strange in there too.
Oh, okay.
Because I remember there was a month where the gimmick was all black covers for all of them, but when you turned it at a certain angle, you could get like an outline of the characters.
Yep.
Can yep. picture that somewhere in the Rise of the Midnight Suns era. And I feel like there's probably like one or two other side characters we're missing. But about a month ago, I read Legion of Monsters graphic novel. And Morbius is in there, Werewolf by Night is in there, Living Money, Elsa, Living Mummy, not Money, Elsa Bloodstone, a lot of your 70s comic code changes. Let's have monsters, but call them something else because yep. comics code isn't changing enough. Yeah, yep. you know, a bunch of those characters all together. And Morbius was fascinating in there. Like a real torn between two worlds. I'm human, but I'm a monster. I'm a doctor, but I'm a vampire. You know, I can help life, but I can destroy life too. I'm in the shadows, but I don't want it. Like, really interesting character. And also kind of like, not empathetic, but more clinical, actually, might be the best way to put it. Seeing things in a very non-emotional way of, I need to do this, and people might get mad at me, but I'm going for this result, so I don't care that you're mad at me.
Yeah.
Because I'm going for this end here. Really fascinating. So I'm starting to kind of like, might want to get into him some more. And then I saw this trailer, and the fact that it's, because Venom made no made it clear it's not tying in at all.
Yeah,
there's not a single Spider-Man reference, joke, comment, background, Easter egg, nothing in Venom. This though, wow, I was surprised. I'm like, oh, we're going for it now, aren't we?
Yep.
I'm real curious now. And I, like, now I'm like, okay, is Michael Keaton Vulture, or is he Michael Keaton as someone else? Because they don't flat out say he's Vulture or anything in there. But it's damn sure implied. There's a Spider-Man murderer poster in the background mm-hmm. as he's walking through.
Yep.
There's been rumors for years that they want to do Sinister Six. Which, Morbius has never been Sinister Six as far as I know, but if you want to use him, go for it. Because it's the...
Mm-hmm.
It ultimately doesn't matter which six villains you pick of. The fact is, there's six from his rogues gallery attack all at once. Like, that's the point of the story.
Yep.
So you could go with anyone you want. I'm damn curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not expecting toys. I'm not expecting kids dressing up as Morbius for Halloween. Or, you know, I'm not expecting it to go that route. but I see it as like, you know, Spider-Man 2.5 or something like that. See it as, here's this little extra side story that you don't have to see, but if you see it, it's going to make the next movie, the next group, you know, even more interesting for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the cast that... Yeah, the cast that that they seem to have, like you said, like Michael Keaton, I'm assuming he's going to be the Vulture, because he seems like...
It's dancer implied.
Yeah. But yeah, Jared Harris, like last year he was in Chernobyl. He's a great actor. Like he's been in so many things. Like I think it was Moriarty in the RDJ Sherlock Holmes movies. You know, he was on Mad Men. He was on The Expanse. I know he was on the first couple seasons. I think he might have been in third season as well. But he wasn't on this new season of The Expanse. But I understand he's a busy guy. Like, I mean, he was doing Chernobyl. He was on The Crown. Great actor. Matt Smith, who played, you know, the Doctor in Doctor Who. My favorite Doctor out of all the Doctors. He's in this movie. And Jared Leto. Like, he looks pretty good as Morbius. You know.
Yeah.
Like, I'm... Honestly, like, the Venom movie, like I said, I haven't watched it, nor do I have any real desire to watch it. Like, you know, Venom has not been one of my favorite characters, and neither is Morbius. Morbius is not one of my favorite characters, but, you know, given the star power and this trailer, it's definitely piqued my interest enough that I think I might actually go out and watch this movie when it comes out in theaters.
Yeah, because I really did not care. It was like, all right, you know, it'll come out earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
I'll grab it on DVD when it's cheap, you know, Black Friday sale or something like that. You know, but I knew I'd see it eventually, but I wasn't worried. Now I'm like, geez, I think I'm going to be missing something if I don't see this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, all right. To end, well, unless you have, do you have anything for Enders you wanted to throw out there, Kevin?
I do.
Okay,
I do.
You go ahead.
Because there was another trailer for another tangential Marvel movie that also went from, I don't care about this movie, to, I think I need to see this, New Mutants.
I haven't actually watched that trailer. But you think it's going to be good? See, I kind of wrote it off because of all the controversy.
So did I. But it's New Mutants horror. I don't know if they're doing Demon Bear or, you know, there's definitely a Sienkiewicz aura over it.
Okay.
I don't know how far they're going. But we see, briefly, we see Cannonball, Sunspot, Wolfsbane, Magic. Magic looks amazing. She's going to be a star. That's a breakaway from this.
Huh.
But here's the thing. Marvel said it's MCU.
I was going to ask about that, because I did see that, but I wasn't sure if that was true or not.
Counts, and there's a big rumor that there's a reshoot to shove in a previous existing MCU character into the movie.
Really? Huh.
To tie it in. Yup. So now I'm like, damn it. I was going to skip it. I haven't even watched Dark Phoenix yet. I'm in
no rush
to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll get around to it eventually one day. I am absolutely no rush in New Mutants. I was going to be like, alright, whenever.
Yep.
You know, I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it'll be an enjoyable, you know, 2 hours, and then I'll forget. But now I'm like, oh, if you're making this count, I might have to. And go back to Feige announcing Phase 4, and we got Black Widow and Eternals and, you know, all the Disney Plus shows and all that. He specifically said, oh, geez, I haven't even talked about Fantastic Four or Black Panther 2 or Captain Marvel 2 or the mutants. He didn't say X-Men. He said the mutants.
Huh.
So were they planning on, you know, is that why this has been held up for so long? Because they had to find the right place to weave it in?
Interesting.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like I said, I kind of wrote this off because of all, you know, because it originally was supposed to come out, like, I want to say, like, 2 years ago?
2 years ago, I think, yeah.
And then it just delayed, and there's reshoots, and then there was a whole thing with them buying, you know, Fox being sold to Disney, and then there was the last I heard is they were thinking about releasing New Mutants on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Or direct to DVD or Hulu, yeah, or something. Yeah, just burying it.
Yeah, but now, yeah, then I saw that they were tying it. But I never actually watched the trailer, but, you know, like, after this, I'm obviously going to watch that. But, yeah, it sounds interesting. And I got a piggyback on this a little bit and say, like, because they did do that reboot of the X-Men comic books recently, you know.
Yep, House X and Powers of Ten.
Yeah, where Jonathan Hickman is basically, like, the editor-in-chief now of the X-Men books. And I got to tell you, out of all the relaunches that have happened, because now, like, we've got, you know, a new version of the X-Men, we've got X-Force, we've got new Excalibur, I want to say there's one called Fallen Angel or something.
Fallen Angels, Marauders.
The Marauders, yeah. But out of all of them, the one that I'm enjoying the most, and I've checked them all out except for the Fallen Angels one, is New Mutants. And Hickman himself has actually written a few of the issues of New Mutants. And, like, yeah, it's like, you know, Cannonball, Sunspot, Magic, Warlock, Boom Boom. You know, it's like a modern take on some of these characters. And also some of the Generation X characters are in there as well, like Mondo and Chamber. Yeah. And honestly, out of all the X-Men books that have relaunched, like, I'm liking X-Force. I've dropped X-Men. I, even though that is written by Jonathan Hickman, I'm not feeling it. Excalibur, I dropped after the first issue. What else is there? The Marauders, I dropped after the first issue. But New Mutants, out of all of them, is probably my favorite. And it's really, really good. So, yeah, that's perfect timing. And, yeah, like, oh, Wolfsbane's in it, obviously.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I'm definitely going to check that out. That's good to hear. All right, so to end Enders, because at the time of this episode was recorded, Star Trek Picard is set to release on Thursday. So, Kevin...
And they announced the second season already before first day even starts.
Yes, they have. So, Kevin, do you have any predictions of Star Trek Picard? Do you think it's going to be good? Or
I mean, I got with the second season, I got to predict he lives. So,
yeah,
I wasn't entirely sure.
Unless that mysterious girl character is his daughter. Which is,
oh, that's true.
Which is the new namesake. Yeah, which is the new theory that's floating on the internet.
Do we know how many episodes first season is? Like 8, 10?
Yeah, I want to say it's like 8 or 10. I don't think it's like, it's definitely not, you know, Next Generation, you know, 25 episodes per season. It's definitely a shorter.
Not a network thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a shorter version, but I think 8 to 10 episodes.
Okay, and they do it weekly. They don't do the binge, right?
Yes, it, from what I understand, it will be a weekly release. So, like, yeah, when it premieres on Thursday, it'll be just the first episode.
He is going to be booted. He's going to be dishonorably discharged at some point during the season.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do something, don't know what, obviously, yet. something is going to be too far and he's going to lose title, everything. Whether he gets it back last episode or whether they make this, because he will, you know, but I'll predict he will lose absolutely everything that he gained from Starfleet at some point during the season.
Mm-hmm.
And have to reclaim it, prove himself again, you know, defeat someone that, you know, is in Starfleet that's been rogue and against them the whole time, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Whichever one of those usual options we go for. But yeah, I'm gonna predict at some point he's gonna be just playing Picard, not captain, not, you know, whatever title.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe he's an admiral, like prior to this. Like, he did get
I knew he got bumped up at some point, I can't remember.
Yeah, because they did do a comic book series, IDW, where it's like a prelude to, like, the TV show. And it was okay. Like he's helping evacuate, you know, Romulans and stuff in this. And he's an admiral, and he's not on the Enterprise. He's on a different ship now. And the one lady that we see in the trailer, like the lady with the curly hair, who he is seemingly recruiting for a mission, she was his first officer on the ship. I can't remember her name. But yeah, so obviously we're gonna get you know, like they've said, you know, we've seen Jerry Ryan, we've seen Riker and Troy. We've seen Data in a flashback scene, and apparently in a cabinet, which my prediction going forward is I think in this season we're going to see Lore. We're going to see Data's evil twin brother. I think that was Lore in the drawer that they pull out, and you see like the android in different pieces. I think that was Lore, Data's brother, and I think he's going to be the big bad. I think he'll turn out to be the big bad, which I think ties in, because last time we saw Lore was during like the seventh season, the Descent two-parter with Hugh and with the Borg and them being freed. And I know Hugh's in this series, so it only makes sense that they're going to tie Lore into it. You know, I think, honestly, I think they're going to reassemble Lore and use him to track down these Borg. Like, maybe there's an issue with, like, Hugh's, you know, sect of the Borg. And I think Lore, obviously, because he's evil, he's going to turn on them and become the big bad. I think that'll be the ironic twist. That's my prediction. I hope it's good. I really do. But, I mean, these are the same people that are making Star Trek Discovery. so, fingers are crossed. And I have faith in Patrick Stewart, because I'm hoping and I'm believing in him as an actor and as a person, that he wouldn't agree to do a mediocre product. That he would, you know, only sign on and do this show if it was going to be of his, you know, higher standards. That being said, I was recently reminded that he was also a writer and a producer of Star Trek Insurrection. So, you know, which, you know, I didn't hate that movie. Like, I didn't mind it at all. But, you know, actually, none of the Next Generation movies were really that great. First Contact's probably the best one. I'm fingers crossed. I wish this the best, because, you know, I'm a huge fan of Next Generation. Patrick Stewart, you know, I got to meet him in 2012. One of the nicest celebrities I've ever met, a true gentleman. And I was so happy when they announced that they were doing this show. And it's been, I mean, that was like a year and a half ago. It was San Diego Comic-Con 2018 that they announced this. So we've had to wait a little bit, and I'm hoping that it was worth the wait. I really do. But yeah, all right. Well,
so are you going to be watching it first thing Thursday, you think, or?
Probably. I have to work Thursday night. But I do believe I can stream it on my phone, so I think during my lunch break and my coffee breaks, I'll try and watch it. if not, I'll probably watch it as soon as I get back to my room in the morning. But yeah, the dreaded night shifts. But hopefully I can watch it. I'm definitely going to be staying off social media until I've seen that first episode. Because I'm thinking they're going to hit us with a big punch that first episode. So I'm
absolutely get everyone hooked and buzzing about it. Yeah.
Yeah, like I'm not predicting they're going to have a baby Yoda, but I really
a baby
think
Borg.
Yeah, well, I'm really thinking something's going to happen. Like it's going to be a lore reveal, or maybe we'll see Sela, because the Romulans are involved here. So I'm hoping we can maybe see Denise Crosby show up in this. Like, there's so many possibilities. Or maybe we'll see Admiral Janeway, whatever. I think there's going to be a surprise in that first episode. Yeah, like you said, to hook us. And so, yeah, I'm definitely staying off social media until I've seen the episode. But, all right, well, I believe we can call this an episode, Kevin. Okay. So we're going to play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. So, Kevin, if I wanted to look you up on the internet, how would I find you?
You can find me, any social media, and my blog at Masked Library. And I spent some time and some money this week and brought thousands of posts going back 12 years from previous blogs and combined them all into the library. So it's like I got a new a collection, a new wing put on.
Nice. Nice. I also do a blog. It's called Random Nerdness, and you can check that out at randomnerdness.blogspot.com. This podcast is based on a group on Facebook called the Pop Culture Pub and Podcast. So go on to Facebook, give us a request to join the group, and I will approve it because I am that nice of a guy. I've said this before, this group on Facebook is, for the most part, very positive. There's a lot of negative groups out there on Facebook. This is not one of them. Overall, we got a good group of people that are part of the Pop Culture Pub and Podcast community, and it's a great group. Check that out on Facebook. I also manage, I'm an admin on the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk. It's a group on Facebook, also a great group. Peter David's run on the Hulk is I've said it before, is my favorite run in comic books. I've been a Hulk fan forever. So be sure to check that out. And I am on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at ChrisLock1701. All right. So on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, and my co-host, Mr. Kevin Decent, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to the Pop Culture Pub podcast. And this was our pick and pans episode, and we will see you again in the not too distant future. So keep calm and the podcast on.